World News Today, brought to you by Admiral Corporation, world's largest manufacturer of radio phonographs with automatic record changers. This program is presented in behalf of Admiral dealers all over America. By shortwave broadcast direct from important overseas stations and leading news centers in our own country, CBS reporters are waiting to bring you first-hand news from the world's political and battlefront. Now, here's Douglas Edwards.
Accent again today is on two widely separated war theaters in the Pacific, the Philippines and the Jap archipelago of islands. General MacArthur's paratroops and amphibious attack forces have invaded Corregidor in Manila Bay, and its complete capture in the official language of the communique is now assured. And from Guam, Admiral Nimitz announces that battleships and cruisers of the great American Fifth Fleet have continued to throw shells at Iwo Jima, 750 miles south of Tokyo. It's possible that the carrier plane attack is continuing on the Tokyo-Yokohama area, although Admiral Nimitz had no word on those operations. Inside Manila, Yank tank and artillerymen have withheld their fire at the old walled city south of the Pasig River. They're waiting a response to repeated American appeals to the Japs to surrender their hopeless position behind the walls, or at least release the thousands of civilians within the area. In Europe, Allied troops are storming through the outer defenses of Gok at the gateway to the Ruhr, and the German radio says the British Second Army is now attacking beside the Canadians. Just a few minutes ago, Marshal Montgomery, in a personal message to his troops under his command, said, "We now have come to the last and final round, and we want and will go for the knockout blow." On the eastern front, the Russian 1st Ukrainian Army is shelling the German cities of Kotlas and Gubin, which guard the southeastern approaches to Berlin. Both sides are bringing up reinforcements. And now, a news report radioed direct from Supreme Headquarters in France. Admiral takes you direct to Paris, Charles Collingwood reporting.
On the waterlogged Western Front, the 1st Canadian Army continues to be the center of interest. This army, which includes English, Scotch, and Welsh troops, as well as Canadians, is pushing its way through the Siegfried Line southeast of Cleve. Yesterday, they made a mile or so and took several hundred prisoners. Most of them were old friends of ours. They belonged to a parachute battalion that had been dropped behind our lines back in the days of the Ardennes breakthrough. The Canadian Army is now only a mile and a half from the town of Gok, which today's communique, in a rare turn of phrase, calls a bastion town in the Siegfried defense belt, which it is. The fighting up here in the mud and among the German defenses is as unpleasant as it comes. An officer of the Scots Fusiliers came down to Paris today to talk about the capture of Cleve. He had red hair, a red mustache, and a Scotch accent you could cut with a knife. He told of how the carriers kept getting stuck in the mud. But when they did, he said, "We just pulled the blokes off that and piled them on another, and on they went." Off on his left, he could see the Canadians paddling around in the water. His own men were on high ground and went in supported by what he called the funny people, the men who drive the flamethrowers and the special tanks and all the strange instruments of war the Canadian Army is using. The funny people, he called them, but the Germans find nothing funny in the way they fight. The 3rd American Army is also bucking the Siegfried Line in their bridgehead across the Ur and Saar rivers, and yesterday they too made good progress, up to a mile, in the great German defense belt, barring the way to the heart of Germany. This is Charles Collingwood in Paris, returning you to Admiral in New York.
We have heard a report from Supreme Allied Headquarters, and now news from one of the Western fighting fronts. For that story, Admiral takes you to the American First Army somewhere in Belgium, Bill Downs reporting.
The entire United States First Army climbed out of bed this morning and let out a groan. Generals getting up from their beds in ruined basements. Sergeants rising for breakfast from under haystacks. And the GIs generally throughout the Army area took a look at the weather and moaned. Yes, it's been raining again. One officer, a veteran of the Southwest Pacific, said they should have told us that Western Germany has a monsoon season. Another GI, drinking coffee rapidly being diluted by the rain, cracked, "What are those guys out in the Philippines going to think of us if this keeps up?" And someone else said that if the rain didn't stop, they would all be developing web feet. We've had four dry and sunny days over this part of the front. Consequently, today's rain was doubly depressing. simply standing in a chow line is almost becoming an amphibious operation. But seriously, this rain is no laughing matter. During the 4 days of sunshine, the flooded Roar River was beginning to recede. The lakes behind the Roar dams are steadily going down. But any more rain, and it may further hinder our movement. Little of significance happened on the First Army front today. The Germans set up 3 extremely large patrols in the Schleiden area, giving them protection by Nebelwerfers and artillery. However, when our artillery got to work, the patrols went back home and nothing came of it. A prisoner taken the other day said that the Germans have built up a good supply of ammunition on this side of the Rhine, but that they feared to use it right now because of our counter-battery fire. This confirms earlier reports that the Germans are preparing for one of the great battles of the war on this side of the Rhine west of Cologne. It may be one of the last great battles for the liberation of Europe. This is Bill Downs returning you to Admiral.
More news in just a moment, but first, here is Warren Sweeney with a message from Admiral Corporation.
Embarrassing, isn't it, to have unexpected guests drop in and not have a variety of fresh foods on hand to prepare an appealing meal for them? Well, you'll never feel this embarrassment again when you own a post-war Admiral Dual Temp refrigerator. The built-in home freezer in the Admiral Dual Temp will make it possible for you to keep nearly 2 bushels of frozen meats, fruits, and vegetables always on hand, ready to prepare at a moment's notice. Now, about foods that don't require freezing temperatures. You'll find they'll keep their vital juices and freshness much longer in the regular food storage compartment of the Admiral Dual Temp. Ready-cooked foods, salads, desserts, even bread and pastries will keep better in the Admiral Dual Temp refrigerator. There'll be more space, too, for the old-fashioned freezer coils will be gone. Yes, you'll be mighty happy with the Admiral Dual Temp because it's really 2 refrigerators in one. Dual Temp is the successor to the ordinary mechanical refrigerator, and only Admiral can build a Dual Temp. Now here once again is Douglas Edwards.
For developments in Britain, Admiral takes you again across the Atlantic to CBS London, Eric Severod reporting.
Surrender for Germany will be unconditional, but then there will be terms which will be revealed in detail only then. Here in the British Parliament, some members are going to ask just what the process will be. Who, what man can surrender the German armies? Will we accept the signature of a general when we have said we will liquidate the German army staff? So far, there is no sign that we will deal with any German political group or political personality. Yet some German will be made responsible for the carrying out of our terms. Somebody must head some kind of German skeleton administration to keep railroads running, power supplies going, 1,001 public services. These things are now run by members of the Nazi Party. Will we fire them all? And if not, where will we draw the line? There are many questions to be asked. The Western Allies are party to various Geneva Conventions, which give defeated troops certain rights to be fed, to be returned home at once, and so on. Rules the Germans themselves do not observe. The Russians are not party to these agreements, and they presumably have other plans for German soldiers. Vast plans are now being made on paper. We are not so short of plans as we are of trained personnel to carry them out. An unexpectedly sudden surrender will be, in some ways, a bit embarrassing. Allied Air Force officers will supervise the dismantling of the Luftwaffe, our ground officers the disarming of the Reichswehr, our Navy people the German fleet. But on the question of German industry, the base and core of it all, there is still much discussion going on between Anglo-American economists and the military, each of whom would like the job of peeling off the various layers of German industry. The military will probably win that argument, as they are winning the argument now of who is to control not only the German press and radio, but the Allied press and radio representatives in Germany after surrender. The basic principle of no political censorship over foreign correspondence inside Germany has not been accepted. We return you now to Admiral in New York.
For Pacific News and an interview with a sergeant from Pennsylvania who has flown over Tokyo and the island of Iwo Jima, Admiral takes you after a brief pause to CBS Pearl Harbor. Tim Limmert reporting. This is CBS San Francisco calling Tim Limmert at Pearl Harbor.
It's pretty hot in the Western Pacific this morning. Although the Japs continue to broadcast claims that U.S. troops have attempted landings on Iwo Jima, we here at Fleet Headquarters have received no official confirmation. However, it will be remembered that on previous invasions, Tokyo Radio was the first to tell the world about them. As usual, Tokyo claims that the attacking Americans were repulsed. The last communique issued by Fleet Admiral Nimitz told of the continuation of shelling by units of the 5th Fleet of Iwo. But the cloud of secrecy has fallen over the whereabouts of Admiral Mitcher's task force that raided Tokyo. As yet, reports of the damage inflicted are unavailable. The enforced blackout of the location of this unit might suggest a naval engagement, but spokesmen at Advance Headquarters refuse to comment in any way. Another Jap claim is that in the recent airstrikes at their capital, they sunk one battleship and damaged another. But these again were from the totally unreliable Tokyo Radio. The two names that have been blazing in the news this past week have been Tokyo and Iwo Jima. So today with me is a man that has seen both of these targets from his B-29. He is Staff Sergeant Charles Alleman of Schuylkill Haven, Pennsylvania. Sergeant Alleman, who is a radio operator, is back here in Honolulu for a rest after completing 13 missions over Japan proper, 2 over Iwo Jima and 1 over Truk. His crew has probably flown more missions than any other from the Marianas, and he has come through it unscathed. First, suppose you tell us a little about Iwo, Sergeant.
Well, Tim, it is not a very imposing-looking island. In the first place, it is quite small, about 5 miles long and 3 miles wide. In the middle and at the southern end, there are two volcano peaks, and between these are the two airfields that have been our main target. On one side of the island is a fair beach, but the other side is pretty rugged. The island is, of course, showing the effects of the bombing that it has received. But those Japs are stubborn and repair the damage to the airstrips almost as fast as we inflict it. But I guess that the recent shelling by the fleet has knocked out a lot of the fortifications.
Most of us are pretty familiar with Tokyo these days, Sergeant. But what were your impressions when you bombed it?
Tokyo is a hard target. The Japs are doing all they can to protect their capital. The anti-aircraft fire is heavy but usually inaccurate. But they send everything in the book at us in the way of fighters. In our last raid over Tokyo, we ran into over 100 fighters, and our plane alone shot down 6. Some of the pilots are good, but others are pretty bad. They are poor shots on the average, and we find that some days they are extremely eager, but other times they stand off and don't come within range. They have learned that our firepower is quite effective and more than a match for theirs.
What do you think about the strike made by the carrier-based planes last week?
That sure was good news. I never expected it, but it will certainly help us out. There are a lot of airfields around Tokyo from which the fighters come. And if they were able to knock out some of these, the Japs won't be able to send so many planes after the 29. However, as I said before, Tokyo is no easy target. And I guess those Navy flyers had a good hot time.
What would the control of Iwo Jima mean to our attacks against Japan?
A great deal. As you know, it is only 750 miles from Tokyo, and that means that they would be able to fly fighters with us on our attack. Fighter protection would be a big help. Since then, we would be freer to turn most of our attention to the target and would not be so bothered with enemy fighters. Also, the Liberators could join us on strikes at Japan, and it is obvious that the more planes we send over a target, the more damage we can do. It will be a bad day for a target when heavy bombers and fighters and our B-29s all come over together.
Was your plane ever hit in your raids?
Just once. A fighter put a couple of slugs in our gas tank. However, none of us were hurt, and although we lost some of our gas, we get back to the Marianas okay.
Thank you, Sergeant Charles Alleman. This is Tim Lemert at Fleet Headquarters in Pearl Harbor. I return you to Admiral in New York.
As you know, American land, sea, and air forces have had a very busy week in the Pacific. And for a summary of developments in the war against Japan, here in New York is Columbia's military analyst, Major George Fielding Elliott.
There is still no confirmation from Admiral Nimitz headquarters of the Japanese reports that American troops are trying to land on Iwo Island in the volcano group, a position approximately 700 miles from Tokyo. It is, however, fairly clear that Iwo is heavily defended. Fire from its guns is reported to have damaged an American warship, and it's possible that a continuation of the air and naval gunfire attacks will be necessary by way of preparation before any landing can actually be made, presuming that one is intended. As to that intention, there is some contributory evidence which may be analyzed. In the first place, it is unlikely that the carrier strike against Tokyo is an isolated operation. It is far more likely to be the beginning of a whole new series of operations. It has been referred to officially as long planned. It's being conducted under the command of Admiral Raymond A. Spruance, who was not actively figured in Pacific operations since June of last year, when he commanded the American naval forces in the First Battle of the Philippine Sea. This means that since that time, Admiral Spruance and his staff have been engaged in making new plans. And it would be surprising indeed if such plans, the making of which extended over so great a period of time, should produce nothing more than a carrier attack on the Tokyo area. Second, it is a fact that there are in the Pacific area at least five divisions and perhaps six of Marines, which have had a long rest and a chance for a complete refit. No Marine division has seen active service since the attacks on Guam and the Pelew Islands, long before the landing on Leyte. It would be an unaccountable waste of good fighting power to leave all these Marine divisions idle for a great period of time. Third, the offensive and defensive advantages of a base in the Bonin or Volcano Islands are so great that it seems very likely that either now or in the immediate future, we shall try to obtain such a base. Aside from the tactical advantages, the strategical advantage of pinning down a great part of the Japanese Air Force for the defense of the home territory should bring our forces rich dividends in operations against the China coast and elsewhere. Finally, there is the distinct possibility that such a move might bring out the remains of the Japanese fleet for a final desperate fight. This is openly stated by an American naval spokesman as being desired by our naval command in the full confidence that any such Japanese move must end in the wiping out of all remaining Japanese sea power, with consequent full freedom of action for American naval forces, supply ships, and troop convoys throughout the whole Pacific Ocean area and in the waters adjacent to the China coast. So even if we are not going to try a landing on Iwo or in the Bonins right now, the chances are that it will not be long before the attempt will be made. Now here again is Douglas Edwards.
Thank you, Major Elliott. Now for a summary of news developments here at home, Admiral takes you to CBS Washington, Tris Coffin reporting.
We have a guest today who has one of his immortal stories of men in war. He is Private First Class Walter Pirowitz of Buffalo. Wally, what were you doing before you were drafted?
I was trying to break in a big-time baseball. I suppose I played ball 14 years. In high school, my brother pitched and I cut. Then I went into professional baseball. I was a catcher with Leesburg in the Florida State League. I got my chance just a week before I was drafted in 1941. I was going to report for spring training with St. Paul.
Where did they put you in the Army?
I was trained to be a medical aid man.
That's a pretty rugged life, isn't it?
Well, you're exposed to fire and you can't fire back. It does make you feel pretty hopeless sometimes. 23 aid men in our company were casualties. 13 of them were killed.
Just what are the duties of a medical aid man, Wally?
A medic is assigned to every platoon. When a soldier is injured, it's your job to give him temporary first aid and evacuate him if possible. You apply tourniquets, make splints, and give him morphine and sulfadiazine, and gently dress his wounds. You try to put him in a safe place, that is, a safer place, like a foxhole.
Is the Red Cross painted on your helmet much protection, Wally?
Well, you hope it is. It all depends on the guy with the gun pointed at you. I was out on a 24-man patrol in Italy in broad daylight. One of our men was shot. My pal and I went out to fix him up. The Jerrys could see our red crosses, but some Jerry machine gunner turned on my pal and riddled his whole left side. Unfortunately, he died. But there was another time we had worked and a man was lying wounded out in no man's land. I went out after him, and boy, was I scared. The moonlight was bright as day, but I wasn't fired on.
That was a pretty heroic act.
You don't think about it that way. It's expected of you. It's in the line of duty. Your job is to help wounded men, and you do it.
I expect the foot soldiers are pretty grateful for the work you medics do.
You bet. In the States, they kid you and call you a pill roller. But over there, brother, the medic is tops. He's the most popular guy over there. The boys would give their shirts to a medic. It makes them feel right good to know that there's a medic going along with them.
What big actions were you in, Wally?
I was along when we invaded North Africa. Also at the invasion of Sicily, Salerno, and Anzio.
Where was it you were wounded?
It was near Anzio. The Germans attacked in the early morning of February 16, 1944. We held and drove the Jerrys back. Then they began dropping mortars on us. I was under all kinds of fire, but this was the worst. I treated several of our men before I got wounded. I saw it coming. It burst right in front of us. Four of us were hit. I remember the whole thing very well. My right leg was blown right off, and I applied a tourniquet. The other leg was hurt, too, but I didn't feel any pain.
And from then on?
I was given wonderful care. My other leg was badly shut up, too, and they had to amputate. I was getting along very well at Waller Eat. I've gotten some new legs, and I'm starting to walk all over again.
Where do you go from here, Wally?
My mother wants me to study to be a doctor. You know, I've learned quite a lot in a practical way, and the government will send me to school. I thought, too, about being a physical education instructor, or my first love is sports, and maybe I'll try to get back in as a coach.
Wally, with your cheerfulness and courage, I know you'll make a go of whatever you do, and all the luck in the world to you. I return you to Admiral in New York.
A few minutes ago, we told you Marshal Montgomery, in a personal message to his troops, informed them that they have come to the last and final round. Here is a part of the text of the general's message just received in the Columbia newsroom. The operations of the Allies on all fronts have now brought the German war to its final stage. There was a time some years ago when it did not seem possible that we could win this war. The present situation is that we cannot lose it. In fact, the terrific successes of our Russian allies on the Eastern Front have brought victory in sight. Montgomery goes on to say, we now have come to the last and final round, and we want and will go for the knockout blow. The rules of the last round will be that we continue fighting till the final count. There is no time limit. We know our enemy well. We must expect him to fight hard to stave off defeat, possibly in the vain hope that we may crack before he does. But we shall not crack. We shall see this thing through to the end. And he says, a somewhat unusual blow will be delivered on the enemy from more than one direction. And now I'm going to ask Major Elliott to tell us what significance he sees in Montgomery's statement.
Field Marshal Montgomery, ever since he took over the command in Africa in the dark days before El Alamein, has been in the habit of issuing orders of the day of this sort on the eve of large-scale operations. This time he's very definite. The last round of the German war, a knockout blow. He means what he says, though we should be careful not to assume that he means that the knockout is to come quickly, before he speaks of hard fighting. It's especially significant that he says that the knockout blow will come from more than one direction. He is undoubtedly referring to the coordinated plans of the Grand Alliance, which were perfected at the Crimea Conference.
Thank you, Major Elliott. And now, once again, here is Warren Sweeney.
If you like good music, there's magic in the word slide away for you. For slide away is the open door to good music. Slide away, you know, is the exclusive Admiral feature that makes it so easy to load and unload the automatic record changer and Admiral radio phonograph. All you do is open the cabinet doors, and out slides the complete phonograph turntable and automatic record changer. Out it comes, close the doors, it disappears. It's as easy as that with Admiral Slide Away. No more groping into dark, hard-to-get-at compartments to change records or needles. Of course, Admiral Corporation is devoting its entire production facilities to war equipment now, and will be, until victory is won. Admiral employees are doing a great job, too, with production vastly increased over last year. But when peace comes, learn more about Slide Away, the open door to good music. You'll find it only in the products of the world's largest manufacturer of radio phonographs with automatic record changers. In Admiral Radio, America's smart set. Carpooling is a vital necessity. The number of automobiles on the road today has dropped to a new low. It is estimated that 4 out of 5 workers depend on automobile transportation to get to and from their job. So it's easy to understand that the conservation of gasoline and tires is more necessary than ever before. If you are not a member of a carpool, join one today for victory. World News Today is brought to you each Sunday at this hour by Admiral Corporation, makers of Admiral Radio, America's Smart Set, and post-war makers of Admiral Dual-Temp Refrigerators, Admiral Home Freezers, Admiral Electric Ranges. Be sure to listen again next Sunday when Admiral brings you World News Today by shortwave, direct from leading news centers of the world. This is Warren Sweeney speaking coast to coast for the Admiral Corporation. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The WBBM Air Theater, Wrigley Building, Chicago.